Yes, my name is Mark Howard. I live in Covington, Georgia, and I'm an artist. The general elections are very competitive these days, and in a political landscape that I think is very polarized, I think it is helpful to be thoughtful about who has a higher likelihood of actually getting elected.
My name is Tammy Camfield. I'm a local citizen in Covington, Georgia. I feel like voting, especially for the local positions that we have in the county, is important because it's important to be involved as a citizen and to be able to have a voice and make a difference for the local officials.
I'm Leah Barnett. I'm from Covington, Georgia. Well, I believe it's every citizen's right and obligation to vote and make sure that we put into office the people that we feel best represent our values.
And the first big step toward putting people in office took place today as Georgians voted in primary elections across the state and, of course, here in Metro Atlanta. Welcome to WABE News Primary Night Special. I'm Dennis O'Hare. And for the next 2 hours, and possibly a little longer than that, we'll bring you up to date on all of the major races and many of the races that are going on at the county levels as well. Joining us in the studio tonight to take a look at all of this, Professor William Boone. He's a political science professor at Clark Atlanta University and former Georgia Republican State Chair Chuck Clay, who's also former state senator from Cobb County. Good to have you both.
Great to be here. Thank you, Dennis.
We'll hear a lot more from you in just a few moments, but let's go right to the results that we have right now, especially the races that have already been called. At the top of the ticket, the race for governor. On the Democratic side, Jason Carter, grandson of former President Jimmy Carter, was unopposed, so he is the Democratic nominee for governor. The incumbent, Republican Nathan Deal, faced a couple of challengers, former Dalton Mayor David Pennington and former state and the current state school superintendent, outgoing superintendent John Barge. Nathan Deal has already been projected the winner. WABE's Jonathan Shapiro is standing by at Governor Deal's election night headquarters at the Georgian Terrace Hotel in Atlanta. Jonathan.
Hi, Dennis. It's an upbeat atmosphere in here. There's about 200 supporters and friends of the governor. We're expecting Deal to come out any moment. The AP has actually just called the race for Governor Deal. Actually, we've got Deal coming out right about now. He arrived about an hour and a half ago, and he talked a little bit about how this was his last race and that he was going to give it everything that he had.
This is my last race. So, you know, when you know it's your last race, you put everything into it because you certainly don't want to lose, and I don't intend to lose.
And so what we're seeing right now is pretty much the GOP establishment in the state up on stage right now at the in this ballroom. We've got the Attorney General, Sam Olin. We've got many of Governor Deal's floor leaders up on the stage. We also have Insurance Commissioner Ralph Hudgens, Secretary, and the Secretary of State. Deal looks like he's about to be introduced.
WABE's Jonathan Shapiro at Nathan Deal headquarters at the Georgian Terrace Hotel, and here's a look at that race right now. With just over 10% of the precincts reporting, Governor Deal has 72% of the votes that have been counted so far, 16% for David Pennington, and 12% for Superintendent John Barge. Now there's that state, that U.S. Senate race, and that is the one that has attracted most of the political advertising, particularly on the Republican side. And let's go there first, taking a look at the race so far with only fragmentary reports coming in right now. Jack Kingston has the early lead with 32% of the vote. He is the congressman from the Savannah area. Businessman David Perdue, 29% in second place. Former Secretary of State Karen Handel with 16%. She's in third. Congressman Paul Brown with 12%. Congressman Phil Gingrey with 9%. Let's go right now to Perdue headquarters. WABE's Michelle Alloy is at the DoubleTree Hotel in Atlanta. Michelle.
Dennis, people here are very excited. The mood is lively. I spoke with candidate Perdue, and he said that he's really excited. Earlier, somebody had told me from one of his staff members described the event today as a victory party. But, I mean, as you know, this race has been very tight. Purdue walked that back a little bit. We've got a clip here. He says, you know that he's not confident 100% that he can come out of this race.
I'm here tonight to see the results just like you guys are. I mean, I know we've done everything we can do. We've put our message out there. We've told our story. And I'm just excited to see how the voters respond to it.
And as Senate candidate Perdue is, he's the cousin of former Governor Sonny Perdue, but he's still portraying himself as an outsider here. And we're still waiting as this goes on to see, you know, what the results are going to be. He expects a runoff, but only time will tell.
WABE's Michelle Alloy at David Perdue's headquarters. Michelle, thanks very much. It's 9:12 on 90.1 WABE. Let's take a look at some of the figures that we've seen so far, and we bring in once again the former chair of the state Republican Party, Chuck Clay, and Clark Atlanta University political science professor William Boone. Let's start with turnout. And Chuck Clay, let's start with you. Secretary of State Brian Kemp's look at early voting shows that we've got more than 27,000 more early voters this time than in the last comparable election, which was 4 years ago. But does that say to you, okay, there was more interest in these races? Or does it say, hey, more people are taking advantage of early voting and there might not be as much interest as you might think?
Having looked at voting trends over the years in a variety of places, I tend to believe that turnout is a little more consistent than a lot of folks like to argue that it fluctuates wildly. I hope that early voting is not just a trend of early voting, but is also indicative of greater voter interest.
Because the whole idea was to make it easier for more people to vote.
And until the votes are tallied, that's a little bit hard. It continues to work hardships on those who lack transportation and have all the traditional issues of getting to their polling places. I hope also that these a lot of the races this year are races that, short of the governor's race and uncontested primaries, there's really not just an overwhelming favorite. And so people are really ginning up their supporters to come out and vote. And I'm going to be optimistic. I think anytime you get one more vote than last time, that's a step in the right direction. We've got to get there.
Do you think, as a former GOP chair, that there was the interest among the rank-and-file GOP voters, particularly in this U.S. Senate race, that the national media might have expected? They're all saying, look, this is a critical race. It'll determine the nominee for a general election that could help determine which party controls the U.S. Senate. You've got some big names or big ties here. But did the average GOP voter show up for this one?
I'm going to say optimistically or cautiously, I think so. I just happened to be up on the square where there was a variety from Senate
square
to Congressional
and Marietta,
Square
right.
And Marietta, yes. And the level of enthusiasm and a level of really distinguished and long-serving and active party members were quite evident and obvious and excited. I think it's a good year because there are a lot of voices. There isn't a predominant or sort of an anointed winner in a number of these races. I think that's good for Georgia. The frustrating part, and I'm sure the professor could tell you the same thing, we talk about primaries. If we got 30% of the vote to turn out in a primary, that would be historic. And so if you're looking at the Republican and Democrats, that's somewhere between 10 and 15% maximum of the potential voters. I'd like to see democracy do better.
Professor Boone, let's take a look at the Republicans for a moment, because one of the things you've heard during these campaigns is, I am the candidate who can best take on, in that Senate race, Michelle Nunn. And there's a little bit of fear behind that. The sense among Republicans is, okay, the demographics are changing on us. Possibly we might nominate candidates who couldn't hold the center, get the old Reagan Democrats, for instance. But as you look at it, do the Republicans at this point have reason to fear, or is it still a Republican state that might be shifting a little more purple than red?
I think you're right. I think the demographics have changed quite a bit over the last 5 to 10 years. I think we all know that. That's one of the reasons why you have the reapportionment, not only in Georgia, but all across the South, in terms of trying to reassure and make certain that certain groups remain in power. But I think here in Georgia, what we have going certainly is a Georgia's in the spotlight now because of a national push. You got a national push by not only Democrats but Republicans as well to turn folk out. The National Republican Party, led by Boehner, as a matter of fact, is standing up to the Tea Party. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the last several months, Boehner's made some interesting statements about the Tea Party. And that has been a signal to move forward.
So it's interesting today he was saying, well, there's not that much difference, really. We're all good conservatives.
Yeah, but I think what is happening, I think both parties, are real, both wings of Clay's party are realizing that they have to sort of meet in the center somewhere.
Neither one would claim a problem.
No, just kidding. But they have to meet in the center somewhere. I think the Tea Party folk who are beginning to say, well, maybe we got to shift our tactics just a bit in order to win the independents, undecideds. The traditional Republicans, as I call them, are certainly thinking about maybe we got to be just on the edge. And you see that in the campaigning.
I agree.
Speaking of Michelle Nunn, whom we were talking about just a moment ago, WABE's Jim Burris is at Michelle Nunn's headquarters, and that's at the Sheraton Hotel in downtown Atlanta. She has already been projected the winner in a four-candidate race. Jim.
Actually, the campaign here didn't want to tell the crowd at first the AP results when the AP called the race in favor of Michelle Nunn. They waited until about 10 minutes before 9 to do that, and as you can imagine, the crowd erupted. But it's really no surprise. You know, Michelle Nunn was the name in the Democratic race for U.S. Senate, so all eyes now on to November. Looking tonight here at the Sheraton, one thing that stands out to me is the type of crowd that we have here. There are a lot of young people, and one of those young people I spoke with said she started following Michelle Nunn about a month ago because she liked the work that Michelle was doing with Hands On Atlanta, the Hands On Network, and also appreciates campaign stances on issues like education. Just about everyone I've talked to here tonight says they believe David Perdue is going to be the nominee on the Republican side, and that's likely who she will face. Right now, former Mayor Shirley Franklin is getting the crowd charged up, a very familiar face to most of those here. And that's just one of the big names behind the Michelle Nunn. We also have Roy Barnes, Andrew Young, all in the Nunn camp. And Michelle Nunn, the daughter of former U.S. Senator Nunn, and walking into the Sheraton tonight, just by chance, I was able to corner the former senator who does not want to talk to the media. In fact, he almost didn't answer my question, but I gave him a softball, and he took it, and this is what he had to say.
What has impressed you about watching your daughter in this primary?
Well, she's become a very good candidate, and we're very proud of her. She's really thriving on it. She enjoys being with people. She enjoys being all over the state of Georgia. She enjoys honing in on the issues. So I've been very impressed with her as a candidate, and I say that totally objectively.
Again, he said, this is my daughter's night. Michelle Nunn just now taking the podium to address the crowd. Dennis, later in the show, I will come back, and we're supposed to get some one-on-one time with her, and I'll let you know what she said.
WABE's Jim Burris at Michelle Nunn's headquarters at the Sheraton Hotel in downtown Atlanta. Jim, thanks. It's 919 at 90.1 WABE. Professor Boone, I want to raise a question with you, and Chuck Clegg, jump in on this one as well. One of the things that Michelle Nunn did that Governor Deal also did was pretty much refuse to take part in debates. And she did take part in one, the Atlanta Press Club debate recently. And full disclosure, I'm on the Atlanta Press Club debate committee. But if Michelle Nunn is going to face a very well-funded Republican survivor, bruised perhaps, but well-funded and battle-tested, did the refusal to debate Steen Miles and Todd Robinson and Dr. Rad, is that going to come back to bite her when she actually has to go up against an opponent who's been through the wars?
Yeah, you know, you raise an interesting point about whether or not one should engage in these kind of debates with lesser-known opponents. And that's, of course, that's the general strategy that most folk do, right? You know, you simply say, I'm not going to give them any visibility. But I think your point is well taken. She's not really been on a one-on-one or debating folk to raise certain kinds of issues with her.
But and her experience is, as certainly she has her father to help her, but her experience is in a nonprofit,
right?
You know, do good things kind of
less confrontational kind of thing. and the folk would bring up all kinds of things about her. The questioning by whomever wins the Republican primary is going to be her conservative credentials. Mm-hmm. Of course, she is running a conservative primary anyway. Her campaign is conservative. But they're going to raise questions about a lot of things that she has not had an opportunity to run any kind of test on. Now, I'm sure that as we go through this thing, people are always already coaching her. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, to actually be out there in combat is a different thing.
Running up on a break real quick, but Chuck Clay, your thought, if you were advising Michelle Nunn, would you have advised her to skip all those debates?
I like to advise to win. She won going away. That's good advice. You can pick up the training, and she'll have to, but right now she's in the winner's circle.
We'll be back with more, including a look at some of the congressional races shaping up in this primary night 2014. It's 9:22 at 90.1 WABE. I'm Dennis O'Hare. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Primary Night 2014, a WABE News special. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Pleasure to have you with us. Joining us again in the studio, Clark Atlanta political science professor William Boone and former state senator Chuck Clay, a Republican from Cobb County, who is also former state GOP chair. But right now, let's go to Atlanta Journal-Constitution columnist Kyle Wingfield. And Kyle, we've got some fragmentary returns on that U.S. Senate Republican race right now, with Jack Kingston holding an early lead. Of course, it all depends. Each of these candidates have their areas of strength. But is there anything that surprises you seeing Kingston at the top with David Perdue second, just a little bit behind, and then Karen Handel a distant third right now with 17%?
Hi, Dennis. Not so much right now. Not too much that surprises me, given the parts of the state that we've seen report so far. Still very light in Metro Atlanta, as you know, and that's what Karen Handel really needs to. She really needs to perform well there in order to catch either Kingston or Perdue.
When you look at how these candidates tried to position themselves, and you know, the "I'm more conservative than thou" sort of thing, Are they counting on the fact that they can move a little bit more toward the middle as the general election approaches, and that maybe the voters who they need to attract in the general election really aren't paying attention to the primary or aren't really interested in it?
I think there's probably some of that. I think more than anything, it's basic survival at this point. The Republican primary is still a battle of conservatives versus conservatives, and so it doesn't matter what your strategy would be for the general election if you can't get to it. And I think the very fragmented nature of the race, geographically and in other ways, the resumes of the candidates meant that they've all had to try to appeal to those conservative voters and get them to the polls for themselves. So I think it's a matter of get into the runoff, then win that, and then worry later about what that looks like in the general election.
We were noticing earlier that Congressman Phil Gingrey right now is running fifth among the what you might call the Big Five. And is there anything of a surprise to that? Because he spent a bunch of money on ads, and he's someone who's quite well known in some really solidly Republican areas of the state.
Well, I think the feeling going in was that you were going to see Handel, Kingston, and Perdue running in the top three in some order, and then Gingrey and Brown a clear fourth and fifth. And I don't know that it's not still possible for Gingrey to pass Brown. The numbers I'm looking at right here, he's 1,700 votes behind. So we may see some of that spending come through for him as, again, some of the Metro Atlanta counties report. But neither he nor Brown was able to really catch any fire and get any momentum in this race. And I think at some point the polls started to show those three separating away, and you saw, rather than voters gravitating toward Brown or Gingrey, maybe some of the voters who were inclined to vote for one of them saying, well, maybe I should go ahead and pick which of the top three I'd like to see win so that I can make sure that person gets in the runoff.
I always felt that. Hi, this is Chuck Clay, and good evening, sir.
Hi there, Chuck.
As always, a pleasure. I always sort of felt that Karen or Phil was going to sort of galvanize that suburban vote. And right now, she, over the last two or three weeks, has been more successful on a really not terribly well-funded campaign in sort of identifying both women voters and, again, without saying so, sort of being the outsider conservative with a little bit of the Sarah Palin touch. And right now, it seems to have brought a certain base. These are all subject to change when the Cobbs, the Fultons, the Cherokees, all the counties, the Gwinnetts, all the ones that you know, start coming in, and that may be subject to change. But I don't think both of them only one has an opportunity to be in that runoff, if either one. And right now, it looks like that might be Karen, and that's no criticism of Dr. Gingrey. I would say there was a little bit of problem identifying exactly what the campaign would be about, other than Obamacare, and the others seem to be able to galvanize a little bit of a more solid base.
Yeah, I think those are some fair points. I think the question really in my mind right now is, Kingston and Perdue both spent a lot of money, and will either of them be able to cut enough into those Metro Atlanta totals for Handel? As you mentioned, it looks like she's the one who's of the Metro Atlanta candidates who will do the best. Will either Kingston or Perdue, or maybe both of them, cut into the edge that she had there, say, in the 2010 original primary, and keep her from getting to that second place spot? That's what I'm really watching for right now.
I think that's the game changer right there.
Cal, this is William Boone. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you tonight?
I'm fine. Let me raise a question with you, though.
Okay.
In terms of thinking beyond the primary, don't you think the Republicans are very, very concerned about, number one, not losing Georgia? Because they lose Georgia, they had a problem in the Senate, maybe.
Of course.
Yeah. And then the question becomes whether or not those folk who were die-hard Tea Party people are really going to turn out and vote either for the folk who are here or for the top, or
in the general
election,
yeah.
When probably either Purdue wins or the other guy or the other person, Kingston. Do you think, what about that? I mean, because you do have a problem here.
I agree. I think I would say there's three things that you'll probably see out of the Republicans to mitigate that effect. One is I think you'll see some the party itself and some outside groups as soon as tomorrow making a lot of effort to attack Michelle Nunn and raise the negatives against her. The second thing I think that you will see is you'll see the emphasis on the governor's race and an effort to drive turnout among Republicans, including Tea Party Republicans, for Governor Deal against Jason Carter, and hope that has some carryover effect to the Senate race.
And also point out, Kyle, that the that neither Congressman Kingston or Perdue, or any of them for that matter, none of these candidates have been in war with the Tea Party, so to speak.
Right.
They both have pretty impeccably conservative—I don't know Mr. Perdue, but obviously he's running as a conservative businessman. We know Jack Kingston's record and pretty much fits the categories. You know, you might have a slight turn, but my view is that most folks, if they're conservatives, they're not going to sit home. They're not going to vote. The alternative is not to go vote for a Democrat. The alternative in most cases is to come back and vote for the home team, and I think that'll happen when this is all said and done with either one of those candidates or if Karen or one of the others slips in.
In most races around the country where it's been Tea Party versus establishment, when the establishment candidate has won, you have seen, for the most part, the Tea Party voters come back and support that candidate. So I think that's probably right. And the third thing that I'll mention that people aren't really talking about yet, but I have a feeling we're going to start hearing more about, is a campaign to drive voters to vote for this constitutional amendment on the ballot in November to cap the state income tax at 6%. I have begun hearing about some efforts that are going to begin pretty soon toward that, and that will help drive some turnout as well. And I think all three of these factors drive Republican turnout, and I just don't see those voters either not voting in the Senate race or voting for Michelle Nunn.
Kyle, real quickly, and we're about to go to Michelle Wirth at Karen Handel's headquarters, but speaking of Karen Handel, in the last Insider Advantage poll, which came out a couple of days ago, Karen Handel did not poll as well among women, at least in this poll, as either Kingston or Perdue. It was really very interesting. She polled 13% to Kingston's 23% to Perdue's 28% among women. Is that an anomaly of polling, do you think, or do you think it's just something that may have to do more with the women who are voting in a GOP primary?
I think we'll have to see how that shakes out. If she does make a runoff, how that turns out over the next 9 weeks of the runoff, and how it looks going into the fall. You know, nationally, what you've seen is married women tend to vote for Republicans, and single women tend to vote for Democrats. And you know, I don't have any reason to believe that we won't see that kind of pattern here in Georgia. And I think that will hold up, whether it's Karen Handel as the Republican nominee or Perdue or Kingston.
If you broke that down into tabs, I suspect her numbers would go up considerably in the Fulton County metro area where she's from. And I think the polls are always they're good. Certainly Insider is, but without a tracking, it's something you really need to look at 2 or 3 or 4 days would tell you a better
really
trend
do.
Line.
You really do. You need more than just one poll.
Right.
Kyle Wingfield, Atlanta Journal-Constitution columnist, thanks so much for giving us this time. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Talk to you again.
Thanks.
Now let's go to Karen Handel's headquarters. WABE's Michelle Wirth is with her at the DoubleTree Hotel in Roswell. Michelle.
Dennis, things here are in full swing at Handel's campaign watch party. There's a large crowd gathered, and most here are optimistic about Handel's chances. Handel herself hugged and thanked many of them about an hour ago. And at this point, Handel says it's early and she's not nervous.
I feel great. I really do. The last couple of days, the last 6 weeks have been outstanding with all the stories have been the momentum of my campaign. And, you know, we can talk about all the endorsements, Sarah Palin, Jan Brewer, Eric Erickson, and then Rick Santorum. But the truth is the real momentum was driven by this group of people right here.
And many of Handel's supporters tell me they're prepared to stay here until they know whether she's heading to a runoff. Dennis?
All right, Michelle, thank you very much. WABE's Michelle Wirth with Karen Handel at the DoubleTree Hotel in Roswell. And let's take a look at the numbers that Karen Handel is putting up right now. Professor Boone, she's in third place right now, and most of the vote that we've seen come in usually comes in from areas outside of the metro area. But she already has some ground to make up. She now is trailing David Perdue by about 25,000 votes, Jack Kingston by 28,000 votes, which is a lot to make up. Still Metro Atlanta to come in, and that's where the bulk of these GOP votes will be coming from. But that's a bit of a hill to climb, isn't it?
It's a very steep hill to climb. For her, it is.
I agree.
Yeah, you agree. Yeah, but it's a very steep hill to climb. And I'm not quite certain. The early thing, I would say she probably will not make it. because in the metro area, I'm not quite sure her support is all that solid. But given the tone of the campaign and given the kind of money that's been poured in by Purdue's people in this area, mm-hmm. So I think she's uphill go.
Well, one would presume, Chuck Clay, that she would do better than Jack Kingston in metro Atlanta, so she'd make up some of that. But the wild card is how well would David Perdue do here in metro Atlanta?
Very much so. I think she's done what she's needed to do apparently so far vis-a-vis Dr. Gingrey. Congressman Gingrey is being that metro candidate. But right now, the leaders have posted a getting to be substantial lead. You know, I have seen general elections where I can certainly remember, and I know the professor will, where for years with Mac Mattingly, when Cobb County came in at 6 o'clock in the morning or 5 o'clock, whatever it was, and delivered 75,000 votes for a Republican. DeKalb was the same way with Barnes. And several others, where almost an equal amount of votes came in and really turned that election around, or Guy Miller would have won, but for DeKalb County. So a little bit early, but the hill's getting a little steeper.
Yeah. Very steep.
It's approaching 9:39 at 90.1 WABE. I'm Dennis O'Hare with Professor William Boone of Clark Atlanta University and Chuck Clay, former state senator from Cobb County and former state GOP chair. We'll be right back to take a look at whether that thought that we had a few moments ago that Tea Party folks would come home once the primary is over and join forces with the quote-unquote establishment Republicans. That and more just ahead as our Primary Night 2014 special continues.
A young mother got a driving ticket she couldn't pay. Fees mounted up. So the court gave her another option.
Mommy was in jail, honey. Mommy won't ever go to jail again, though, I promise you. Mommy went to jail because I couldn't pay money. I didn't have money to pay. That's why I went to jail.
I'm Renee Montaigne, Modern Debtor's Prison, on the next morning edition from NPR News.
Atlanta Sounds.
Being able to fly fish in the city is, I think, one of the treasures that Atlanta has. I'm Dave Jones. I'm out here on the Chattahoochee River at the Jones Bridge Park. The water's clear and the fish are biting. Well, this is a fly that on the end of this line. I call it a streamer. It's a little bit heavier. This is a fly I use with great success, and hopefully we can go out here and fool them today.
Atlanta Sounds.
And if you've got a sound idea for this series, why not tell us about it at wabe.org/Atlanta Sounds. It's 9:41. Our primary night 2014 special continues on 90.1 WABE. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Joining us in the studio once again, Clark Atlanta political science professor William Boone and former Cobb Republican State Senator Chuck Clay, who's also a former chair of the state GOP. But we move to the Democrats right now. Congressman Hank Johnson in the
state of
4th
Israel.
District, which is DeKalb and Gwinnett and parts of other counties as well, Rockdale, I believe. He is in a tight race with challenger and former DeKalb County Sheriff Thomas Brown. Right now, not too much in the way of returns, but Hank Johnson holding a slim lead, 53-47% over Thomas Brown. Congressman Johnson joins us now. Congressman, welcome.
Thank you, Dennis. Good to be here.
How nervous are you?
I'm not very nervous, Dennis. I really am not. Of course, I would like to know what the final outcome is going to be, but I'm pretty confident that we will achieve victory tonight.
Were you surprised when you got a challenge? Because certainly you have taken some slings and arrows from the Republicans, but did you feel any sense that Democrats might have thought you would be a weakened candidate and therefore perhaps somebody that should be primaried?
Well, I don't think it was the opinion. I don't think that's where this challenge arose. I don't think it arose in that way. I believe that my opponent has always wanted to go to Congress, and he's closed out his law enforcement career, and, you know, he's moving up in age, and he just felt like this was his time to do it. And so he did it, and so we have to deal with it.
Congressman, this is William Boone. Where do you think Tom Brown is getting his support? I mean, he seems to have a lot of money coming in to challenge you.
Mm-hmm. I think that he is drawing some money from Republicans and other sources, and I'm not sure that his disclosure forms have been quite accurate. So it's kind of hard to tell exactly how much and from where his money's coming from. But from what I have seen, his money is, he's getting a lot of money from Republicans. He's also been able to get the bonding companies while he was sheriff, who were doing business with the jail, to contribute lots of money. So he got lots of money from bonding companies, and also the county's legal organ, the Champion, raised a lot of money for Tom Brown. Of course, he's one of the three public officials that they need in order for them to retain the county organ business, which has produced millions of dollars for him. So, of course, they have supported Tom as well. And, you know, he's got some true Democrats who are supporting him as well. So it's been a kind of a potpourri of funding sources. And I have to tip my hat to him that he's done a good job of raising money. I just wish we were able to determine precisely how his money has been spent and what it has been spent on.
Real
but
quick,
those are things he has to deal with the FEC.
Congressman, real quickly, in the last few hours of the of this primary campaign, there was a question as to raised by some folks associated with Tom Brown's campaign over whether an endorsement of you from President Obama was real or not. Have you spoken to the president's folks? And the Democratic National Committee apparently showed a note that contained at least what appeared to be a genuine endorsement from the president.
Yeah, there's no question that the president has endorsed me. as he's done in three out of my four elections when I've asked him. And so there's just simply no doubt about that. And that piece that my opponent put on his Facebook page and his website was just a something that disappointed me greatly about the character of the opponent, the true character of the opponent. I think it shows in the waning moments of the campaign, and I think it indicates that he knows that he's going to lose this campaign.
Congressman Hank Johnson. Congressman Johnson, thanks so much for giving us this time, and we'll keep an eye on it and maybe talk to you a little bit later. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Dennis.
Now we go to Dan Wisenhunt of Decaturish, who has been watching all of these local races. And you've heard the exchange just a moment ago with Congressman Johnson. What are you seeing at this point in terms of the question of where Tom Brown's support came from?
It's a brave new world when we're talking about what people are doing on Facebook, I guess. that was my first thought. I'm like, really, Facebook? I don't know. But, you know, I really haven't kept up with that one too much. I've kept up with it in so much as it's affected the current sheriff's race because, you know, his vacancy sort of created this vacuum that Vernon Jones has confidently stepped in to fill. But, you know, I was always kind of curious about that one, too. He seemed like a strong incumbent. I didn't hear anybody that had any particular problems with him, but I think the congressman's assessment of it sounds pretty spot on. He's, you know, always wanted to run for Congress, and I thought it was a good opportunity, so he did it. I couldn't say much more about it than that.
And actually, that sheriff's race you're talking about, the incumbent Jeff Mann, who succeeded Tom Brown when he resigned to run for Congress, Mann is probably headed for a runoff, but he has a big lead over everybody else, nearly doubling everybody else with 40% of the vote in the early returns.
Yeah, but it looks like he's going to have to face Vernon Jones, though. I don't envy him on that one because Vernon Jones is, no matter what people say about him, he is a very clever politician. And, you know, he's kind of come out of nowhere to jump in this thing and make it competitive. And, you know, it was funny. I did a voter's guide, and I sent it to all the candidates, and I sent it to Vernon Jones folks. And you know how these things happen. Emails get missed or whatever. And Vernon Jones didn't return, but I got a bunch of people saying, where's Vernon's? Where's Vernon? So I sent it back to him and said, hey, I got a lot of people asking for this. And so he did send it to us ultimately. So he's just one of those candidates that everyone, you know, no matter what your opinion of him is, they're kind of focused on him.
And he is running second right now with 22% of the vote to Jeff Mann's 40, and Melvin Mitchell in third place with 14. Dan, real quickly, as you look around DeKalb, any other surprises, major things going on this primary night, at least at this still relatively early stage?
Well, one thing that surprised me, and I haven't checked the latest on it, but a former Decatur school board member by the name of Valerie Wilson is running for state
school superintendent.
She's going to be able to make it to the runoff, which, you know, I don't even know where they find these 12 dozen people to run for these superintendent seats. But, yeah, and that surprises me because I didn't know if Valerie had a presence outside of Decatur. I think she does. I think she served on some state associations. Her biography is not in front of me, but that one has definitely jumped out there and surprised me.
And with about a third of the precincts reporting in that race, Valerie Wilson is the leader right now with 31% of the vote. State Representative Alicia Morgan is in second with 24, but so there will be a runoff there, but Valerie Wilson right now, at least, in first place.
There's some interesting post-election analysis to be done on that one, I think. I'll have to look into that one some more. It's pretty interesting.
Dan Wisenhunt, thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, sir.
Now let's go to Jack Kingston's headquarters. And once again, he has, in the early returns, he is now in almost a dead heat with David Perdue with 30% of the vote each. This in the Republican race for the U.S. Senate nomination. And LEU right now is with Jack Kingston at the Georgia Tech Hotel and Conference Center. Ellie.
Hi, Dennis. It's a packed room here. Jack Kingston just got off the podium speaking. He said he told the supporters the goal is to win first or second place, and he told them that he's feeling pretty good. He actually flew in today from Washington, D.C. after voting on the water bill for deepening the Savannah port. He says he's been working on this project for 14 years, and even though it was election day, he didn't want to miss the vote.
A lot of members of the House were saying, what are you doing here? But I would not have missed it, because that, in terms of my congressional career, probably the top five votes that I've ever taken.
He did get a chance, however, to wave to some supporters on a street corner in Roswell before arriving here. But supporters are optimistic. It's a very energetic mood here. People are very upbeat and looking forward to the election results.
WABE's LEU, who is with Jack Kingston at the Georgia Tech Hotel and Conference Center. Ellie, thanks very much. And
thanks.
Speaking of David Perdue, as we continue to get returns in, he has now taken the lead over Jack Kingston in that Republican race for the U.S. Senate nomination. 30% of the vote for David Perdue, 29% for Jack Kingston. Karen Handel in third with 19%, Paul Brown in fourth with 11%, Phil Gingrey in fifth with 9%. On the Democratic side, Michelle Nunn, 76% of the vote. She has been declared the winner in that race. In the race for the Georgia Republican gubernatorial nomination, Nathan Deal, 72% of the vote, 17% for former Dalton Mayor David Pennington, and 12% for State School Superintendent John Barge. We mentioned the Hank Johnson race and talked with Congressman Johnson. He holds a slightly bigger lead now over Tom Brown, 54%, with probably a little over 20% of the precincts reporting. 54% for Hank Johnson, 46% for Tom Brown. We mentioned the state school superintendent's race. Valerie Wilson leading a crowded field of Democrats with 31% of the vote. In second place right now, Alicia Morgan with 24%. An even more crowded Republican field for state school superintendent. That one is definitely headed for a runoff. The front runner right now, Michael Buck with 20% of the vote. Richard Woods with 19%. Again, that with just over a third of the precinct's reporting. So there's a bit of a reset. Let's go back to our experts now. Clark Atlanta political science professor William Boone and former state GOP chair Chuck Clay. Professor Boone, in that conversation with Hank Johnson, he sounded a bit surprised that he got a primary challenge. I'm wondering, given all of the heat that he's taken, some of it from within his own party, should he have been surprised?
Well, I'm surprised he's surprised. No, seriously, I am surprised he's surprised, because there have been quite a few rumors running around over the last 6 months or so that Hank was a bit vulnerable and a bit weak. And it's usually on some very, what I would call, rather mundane things. The way Hank approaches problems, the way he thinks through problems, and his presentation of problems sometimes comes back to haunt him a lot. And it gives the impression that he's not on top of issues. And that has sort of circulated through the district in terms of whether or not a Tom Brown would be a better representation. I know those things are rather facile, but nevertheless, these are things that folks look at when they begin to decide who's going to represent them.
On the other hand, if he were that vulnerable, he would be trailing right now, and he's not. So where is he drawing his support?
I think his support probably lies in South DeKalb County. I think very heavily in South DeKalb County. I think Congressman Johnson alluded to this. A significant portion of support for Tom Brown probably comes from the north end of the county, maybe even a bit in the central end of the county. Certainly a good deal of the financing came from that way. And we know that there have been alliances between Tom Brown and persons in that end of the county. So I think if you look at South DeKalb, that's his stronghold. That is Johnson's stronghold. And I suspect that if we look at it very closely, that's where he's getting his support from.
Chuck Clay, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say the interesting part in that Senate race is I was talking to some of the Kingston people earlier today, and my thought was then if one of those Metro candidates, and then I was discussing Congressman Gingrey, if that vote stays low, and Karen is not just going great guns, that vote is going to tend to Jack. And as long as you see Phil staying fairly low in this race,
which he is right
and,
now,
and Karen sort of staying right where she is, it tells me that he's pulling enough of that Metro vote to get him, I think, into that runoff.
You're referring to Kingston.
Kingston
now.
At this point in time, it looks like Perdue will be there. He's run a masterful campaign, and I think unless something dramatically changes, and where you see Phil's numbers rise dramatically in some of the metro areas, I think that's saying that a lot of that vote has moved or tended to go more to Kingston than Karen, and it puts him in, I think, good spot.
But doesn't that raise the question about whether or not people who lean Tea Party or lean undecided are thinking more about who can win in the general election?
I think that's always the case, and I think certainly it's been talked about constantly in the Republican Party, as you well know, for the very reasons you've said. I also like to think that in a case of Kingston, and I give him credit for this, he has delivered for Georgia. And I still like to think that at some point in time, as much as there's sort of an anti-government, anti-tax, sort of anti-size of government, and I get that, I understand it, I agree with that, but you look at that Port of Savannah, where we'd be without it, and we would not be where we are right now without Kingston's position in Congress. To me, that's important.
And paradoxically, there's a Democrat involved here who isn't in the metro Atlanta area, but John Barrow, the congressman whose district includes part of that Savannah area, who has a target from the Republicans every year.
Sure.
Will this vote just today by the House to pass the water bill that brought the Port of Savannah, if it's going to help Kingston, is it going to help Barrow, too, shield himself yet again from a Republican challenge?
Certainly will help. Can't possibly hurt. I think it would help. Though it's not. The district is not as much Savannah-oriented. It is certainly part of it, and I think it would be the type of thing that would certainly be beneficial to him. I think that one's an obvious one.
Yeah, he's running against Rick. Oh, Rick Allen is running against him.
Mm-hmm. Who's run against him before or tried to run against him before.
Right, and Barrow's always succeeded. Because Barrow's not what you call a true Democrat in the eyes of some Democrats.
Walked a fine line.
Right.
But he's been a survivor.
Yes.
We've got just a minute or two left here before we have to take a break for NPR News, and then we'll be back for another hour. But you were talking about Tea Party. Both of you alluded to whether Tea Party Republicans would come home for the general election. But right now, we have challenges to Republican state lawmakers who might never have thought they'd face Republican challengers before. Fran Miller, a long-established Republican in the state Senate from the Dunwoody area. Jeff Mullis from Chickamauga, who's the Rules Committee chairman. Among House Republicans, Speaker David Ralston is facing a challenge. All of these are challenges that people would not have thought possible, Chuck, a year or two ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's clearly, that's probably where you see this sort of fight out for the, maybe if you want to call the heart and soul of the Republican Party. It's been more at the local level. I think the Mullises, the Ralstons, I think even Fran Miller, he's a little bit of a maverick, but has been a very successful, legislator. I think an interesting race in Marietta is just the reverse, a Charles Gregory is being challenged by a very dynamic young attorney, Burt Reeves, where it will be interesting to see whether that sort of more traditional main street, if you will, Republican can come back and actually knock off one of the true ideologues, and proudly so, I might add, ideologues in the Republican caucus in the House.
And taking a look at, for instance, Speaker Ralston's race right now, he has a 61-39% lead over his challenger, Sam Snyder. But that's with just over 10% of the precincts reporting, so it's still very early. But you would think that he would be in pretty good shape there.
I think so. I mean, I'm not objective in that race. He's a friend. I want him to win.
And you mentioned in that District 34 race, Charles Gregory, the incumbent, being challenged by Albert Reeves, the attorney you referred to. 50-50 right now. They are separated by 5 votes, but it's still very early.
That's my representative.
It's 10 o'clock at listener-supported 90.1 WABE Atlanta. We'll bring you the results from all the other races when we come back, and we'll spin around the candidates' headquarters once again. But at the top of the ticket right now in that Georgia Republican race for the United States Senate, David Perdue has taken the lead right now. He has 30% of the vote, with Jack Kingston coming in at 29%. Karen Handel, third place with 19%.